Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 10, Text 29. Aditsor Anna Pananam Asan Kukshi Antra Nadaya Nadya Samudras Cha Tayos Tushtihi Pushtis Tat Ashraye Aditsor Annapananam Asan Kukshyantra Nadaya Nadya Samudras Cha Tayos
Nadya Samudras Cha Tayos
Tushti Pushtis Tadashraye
Tushti Pushtis Tadashraye
Aditsoho Desiring to have Anna Pananam
of food and drink
Asan there became Kukshi the abdomen Antra, the intestines.
Nadayaha,
and the arteries.
Nadyaha,
the rivers.
Samudraha,
seas.
Cha,
also.
Tayoho,
of them.
Tushtihi,
sustenance.
Pushtihi,
metabolism.
Tat
of them.
Ashraye,
the source. When there was a desire to have food and drink, the abdomen and the intestines and also the arteries became manifested. The rivers and seas are the source of their sustenance and metabolism. Purport. The controlling deities of the intestines are the rivers, and those of the arteries, the seas. Fulfillment of the belly with food and drink is the cause of sustenance, and the metabolism of the food and drink replaces the waste of the bodily energies. Therefore, the body's health is dependent on healthy actions of the intestines and the arteries. The rivers and the seas, being the controlling deities of the two, keep the intestines and the arteries in healthy order. Aditsor annapananam asan kukshyantra nadayaha nadya sumudras chatayos tushti pushtis tarashraya. The universal form continues to manifest itself. Here it said that when he desired to have food and drink, then the abdomen, the intestines, and the arteries became manifest. Everything is interdependent. We say that we depend on food, but we also depend on the bodily organs to digest the food and dispose of the waste products from the food. Otherwise, food is useless. You may have all the food in the world, and if you have no digestive capability, then the food is of no value. And similarly, you may have great digestion, and if you have no food, you're in trouble again. And we understand from Vedic literature that the organs for the organs involved come under the control of particular demigods. Just as in the state, there's an electricity department, a water department, sewage department. So in the greater state of the universe, there are particular authorities, demigods, who control the various functions of the body. We can't even lift an eyelid without the cooperation of some particular demigod. We're thinking, my body. But my body is not really under my control. It's not fully under my control. The body can be paralyzed. Any part of it can be paralyzed. Any part of it can stop working. Or may work partially or badly. And it's not under my control. I'm wearing glasses because my eyes are not functioning fully. What control do I have over that? So everything is finally beyond our control. Everything is interdependent. I have some controlling power. I can say, I have some volition in the matter. I have some say. But I don't have absolute control at all. Higher authorities are controlling. This is because the body is part of the machinery of the universe. As there are stars and planets and suns and clouds and rain and so many things that are part of the greater cosmic machinery. The little stuff is also part of the cosmic machinery. We belong to the little stuff. We're the details of the universe, the small little machines who walk around on the surface of the earth. And of course there are others that can't walk, the non-moving living beings, or those who are in the air or the water. All of these machines, all of these bodies, are under the control of the laws of nature. And the laws of nature are administered by the empowered demigods. And in the background, behind all of these demigods, behind all of this machinery, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva Karana Karana, the cause of all causes. Therefore, ultimately, every one of us is controlled by Krishna. The demons who are fond of drinking can't drink without Krishna's permission. They can't eat without Krishna's permission. They can't do anything without Krishna's permission. Upadrashtanu mantacha, Krishna is within as the super soul, observing and permitting the actions of all the living beings. We're dependent fully on Krishna, and at the same time we're denying Krishna. Even to deny Krishna, I deny Krishna. We're dependent on Krishna. Unless Krishna gives permission, we can't even blaspheme him. We can't even deny him. Because to do so, we're dependent on the machinery of material nature, which is on loan from the Supreme Lord. So, the portions mentioned here, the abdomen, the intestines, the arteries, are linked with larger manifestations. The same deities who control the digestive system also control the ocean. They also control the ocean. Therefore, there's a link between the ocean and the intestines and the stomach. And the arteries are under the same control as the rivers. The same deities are involved. or the, sometimes Srila Prabhupada says, the nervous system also is under that same control. Therefore, patients with digestive difficulties are advised in Ayurveda to bathe in the ocean. And those with nervous problems or circulatory problems are advised to bathe in the rivers. There are subtle connections between these. For some of the senses, the connection is obvious. The controlling deity of the vision is the sun god. Because unless the sun is shining, you can't see. Or you have to rely on artificial light, which depends finally on the sun anyway. Petrochemicals to run your generators, and petrochemicals depend on the sunshine, energy of the sun. So there's a relationship between the eyes, the sun planet, and the sun god. And this sun god, or the sun planet, are finally again part of the universal form of Krishna. The sun is the eye of the universal form. For tasting, we're dependent on the deity controlling water, because there's some water. Water is always present on the tongue, and with the help of water, we taste. Taste is one of the qualities of water. In earth, there's only sound, but not taste. Smell, but not taste. But in water, there's taste. Do I have it right? No, it goes the other way. The water has taste, and then when you get to earth, there's smell, there's taste, there's sound, there's everything. When you go from subtle to gross, the qualities increase. So, anyway, for taste, we're dependent on the element water. The tongue always has water on it. The tongue is dry and it can't eat and taste. So there's a relationship between the tongue and taste and the deity controlling water. So in this way, there are subtle connections between the greater machinery of the universe and the small mechanical manifestations called these material bodies. Tushti pushti tadashraya. Tushti means sustenance, or tushti means also satisfaction. Pushti means metabolism or nourishment. We're dependent for all these on Krishna. Our whole life in every department is dependent on, to think, you depend on the mind. The mind is the energy of Krishna. Or intelligence is the energy of Krishna. So the concept of independence from Krishna is illusory. It's utter illusion. I'm independent. It's foolishness. I'm always dependent. I'm dependent on nature. I'm dependent on the gods who control nature. And finally, I'm dependent on the ultimate controller of nature, Krishna. But I'm claiming myself independent, and that's a symptom of delusion. I'm not independent in anything. I'm not independent in anything at all. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Arishtanam tata karta karanam tat pratag vita divitascha pratag cheshta daiva shaivatra pancham." There are five factors that bring about the accomplishment of any action. What are they? Arishtanam. Arishtanam means the place or the body. Tata karta, and the doer. Okay, I'm the doer. And karanam. Karanam cha, the senses. Pratakpita. The different kinds of senses. The knowledge-gathering senses, like the ears, the eyes, the nose, sense of touch. And the active senses, hands, legs, and so on. So the senses, you may have a good idea to do something. If your senses aren't working, you can't do it. Karanam ta cha pratagvita. Vividas cha pratag cheshta. And the various kinds of endeavor. You may have good senses. You may be a good worker. You may have a good place, good body. But there has to be some endeavor to accomplish something. And daiva chaiva trapancha. The ultimate feature is daiva, the hand of destiny, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All of these are important or required for bringing about the accomplishment of anything. Let's see. Where is that verse? Adishtanam tata. Nyayam va viparitam va panchayate tasya hetava. Without these five causes, nothing happens. No action. Tatrayavam satikartaram atmanam kevalam tuyaha. Pashyatya krita buddhitvan, nasa pashyat durmati. If anyone thinks that I alone am bringing about the accomplishment of this action, then he's a fool. Durmati, bad intelligence. Poor intelligence. Pashyatya krita buddhitvan. He's not seeing properly. He's got crippled vision. Daiva, finally, is the ultimate feature for bringing about anything. Even if you don't accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's some superior force that determines whether or not something works. You may be the right person, you may have all the right ideas, you may do everything just perfectly, and it may fail. It happens. People go into business, they have a great business plan, they have all the smarts in the world, everything's lined up, it should all work, and it fits. Or on the other side, someone comes up with a cuckoo idea, he's not really all that capable, everything's stacked against him, and it works fabulously. Why? The example is given by Prahlad Maharaj that sometimes a child has good parents and all protection, and the child dies. Or sometimes a patient has a good doctor, not a very serious disease, and dies. Or sometimes the child is unprotected and lives, or the patient has a very serious disease and no medical treatment and lives. How do we explain that? Daiva chaivatrapancha. Finally, there's the hand of destiny. If some guy is tinkering around with his friend in a garage and becomes a multimillionaire, he starts Apple Computer. You know why? And there's so many guys tinkering around in their jobs, in their garages. Why don't they all become multimillionaires? Why just one or two? Or why don't they all fail? Finally, we can't explain these things simply by reference to material laws. There's a divine force working behind everything. Those who are atheists and impersonalists just say it's destiny, it's fate. But finally, what is fate? What is destiny? What do you mean by fate? You know, if you say chance, chance doesn't make anything happen. Chance is just a description. There's some reason why things happen. So, philosophy means to try to find the ultimate reason, the ultimate cause. Janmadhyasya, the ultimate source. Not that things simply happen. They simply happen that way. There's no explanation. That's the way it is. That's the way the world is. Things simply happen. That's no explanation. That's drawing a blank. That's not being able to explain. Finally, Bhagavad Gita says the cause of all causes is Krishna. Brahma Samhita, Sarva Karana Karana. He's the original cause. So our Srimad Bhagavatam means to understand that original cause of all causes. He's the cause of the material nature, the actions of material nature. Maya jakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara hetunanima. Hetu means cause. Because of this cause, material nature is working. Hetu nani na kantiya jagat viparivartita. The world is moving the way it does because of the superior control of Krishna. Maya adyakshena. Adyakshena means supervision. Things work when there's supervision. Even in, say, temple affairs. If you want the deity worship to go on, if you want the floors to get cleaned, if you want prasadam to be cooked on time, if you want the sankirtan parties to go out, what do you need? You need supervision. Somebody has to be there and say, did this happen? Did that happen? Do you need anything? Is everything lined up? Don't go here, go there. Don't do this, do that. Supervision. Without supervision, nothing happens. Every government has some agency for supervision. The law, traffic laws, why are they laws? Because there's supervision. There are police cars, there's radar, there are cameras. Why? They're seeing, they're supervising. And if you don't follow the law, then you're given a penalty. Supervision. Without that supervision, there'd be no law. It would simply be theoretical. The law is there because it's enforced. We say the laws of nature. But why are there laws of nature? How are the laws of nature enforced so that they're laws? Law means practically invariable. When we say the laws of nature, they always work. Why do they always work? Because there's supervision. Whose supervision? Krishna says, Maya jakshena, my supervision. Supervision means intelligence. Intelligent supervision. You have stupid supervision, again, you don't get anything done. It has to be intelligent supervision. But Krishna is the supreme intelligent person, and he's supervising everything. Mayadyakshin. Intelligence means person. There's no unembodied intelligence floating around there. Intelligence means there's personal identity. It means there's thinking. There's desire. I want it to happen this way. There's will. Thinking, feeling, willing, these are all symptoms of a, signs of a person, qualities of a person. The chair is not thinking. The chair has no feelings. The chair has no desire or will. But the person has thoughts, feelings, will. And where are all these persons coming from? Baba traces, I have my father, he has his father, his father, his father, his father. You trace it back, you come to the original father. So, for everything, there's a whole line of control. From the smallest detail of the universe up to the great movements of the stars and planets, there's control. The little DNA is always working in a certain way, under higher control. And the cosmic manifestation is working under control. Intelligent control. Krishna's control. Well, the Srimad Bhagavatam is describing that supreme control, starting from his relationship with the cosmic manifestation. In the second canto in particular, we read about the personality of Godhead in terms of his relationship with the workings of the material nature. Because our vision is within the realm of material nature. We're not seeing the spiritual world. We're seeing the material world. And we're wondering, or we should be wondering, how is the material world working? What's behind everything? What's the cause of everything? So the Bhagavatam gives us that understanding. Behind all the workings of the material nature is Krishna. Krishna is the supreme, intelligent, powerful person who's making everything happen. He has all, nature has, shows signs of intelligence. The source of the intelligence is Krishna. It shows strength, evidence of strength. The source of the strength is Krishna. It shows beauty. The source of the beauty is Krishna. All opulences that we find within the material cosmic manifestation are manifestations of Krishna. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimad virjitam eva va tat tad eva vagascha tvam mam tejamsa sambhava. Whatever there is that's wonderful, beautiful, opulent, is a manifestation of the potency of Krishna. Atava bahunayatena kim gyatena tavarjana Vishtavyahamidam Krishnamekam Shena Stitojagat. With one fraction of himself, Krishna maintains the entire cosmic manifestation. Krishna expands as the Mahavishnu, Garudaksha Vishnu, Shiradaksha Vishnu. And everything is maintained. So, in this way, we have to understand the personality of Godhead, Krishna, from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Are there some questions?
How to understand the statement, the God So the guys don't want to interfere in our understanding.
Hmm? I couldn't hear properly.
How to understand the statement that Krishna don't want to interfere in our independence?
How to understand that Krishna doesn't want to interfere with our independence? He gives tiny independence. He does interfere with your independence. Or that is to say, your independence doesn't consist of a whole lot. We don't have as much independence as we think. I can do what I want. I can live my life as I want. I have freedom. No one can restrict me. Nothing. Baloney. Nonsense. I'm so restricted. I'd like to fly. I'm restricted. How much flying can I do? Birds can fly all over the place. Mosquitoes. We're earthbound. And where's my independence? I see 20 gulab jamuns, I'd like to eat them all. Where's my independence? I can't do it. We have tiny independence. Very tiny. Krishna's Swarat, he's fully independent. And we, as tiny fragmental parts of Krishna, have tiny fragmental independence. That independence consists essentially of the choice of surrendering to Krishna or refusing to surrender. If we refuse, we come under the control of material nature. And then our independence is conditioned by material nature. I have this body that so much limits my independence. Why human take a snail or a barnacle? How much independence does a barnacle have? You know what a barnacle is? They're those little sea creatures that attach themselves like rocks to the side of a ship or to a pier. A little barnacle is, you know, what can he do? Start a war? Start a business? Go looking for a pretty girl? He's so limited. All he could do is attach himself to the ship and stay there. Why? Because material nature has limited his independence. You were sinful. Now you can't go anywhere. Just like a prisoner. You've broken the law. You have to stay in this little cell. You can come out for 15 minutes a day and walk in the courtyard and then go back in your cell. Your independence is restricted. Or a madman is strapped in a straitjacket. You can't move your arms. You can't move your legs. Why? Because you're a madman. Material nature restricts the conditioned soul severely. Then where's our independence? In the spiritual world, the living beings show greater independence, but they use their independence in the service of Krishna. They can do all sorts of things, described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, perhaps you've read. They can change their forms. They can be a sage in the morning and a bird in the afternoon and something else in the evening. A tree or a human being. They can change their forms. Not a problem. They can do just about anything. But they never do anything except for the service of Krishna. Therefore they have freedom. Just like a free citizen, yes, you can walk wherever you like, you can do this, you can do that. Why? Because you're law-abiding. And if you're an outlaw, then go to jail. But if you're cooperative with the government, then you're given freedom. Yes, do as you like. Why? Because you'll cooperate. So the full freedom of the living being is manifest in the spiritual world, where the living being in his healthy condition cooperates with Krishna and serves Krishna. And in the spiritual, in the material world, the bewildered living being who imagines that he has all independence is strictly limited by the laws of nature, so that he can't even lift a spoon without material nature's permission. So independence finally means tiny independence, which we misuse in the material life, and which we use properly when we surrender to Krishna. Is that okay? Something else?
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, what happens to the organism? How does it change when we start to become a Krishna consciousness?
How does destiny change when you come to Krishna consciousness? And when you're initiated and so on? Yes, it changes, because without Krishna consciousness, I'm strictly controlled by the laws of nature, especially by the modes of ignorance and passion. How are we controlled? We're controlled by these three qualities of nature. Everyone's always acting according to these qualities. If a person is passionate, you know what he's going to do. He's going to act passionate. A person's ignorant, you know what he's going to do. He's going to act ignorantly. And then he'll get the consequences of acting passionately and ignorantly. The ignorant person eats, you know, contaminated things and gets sick, or drinks liquor and gets drunk and diseased. Passionate person does anything and everything for sense gratification and gets involved in all sorts of repercussions. So we're especially bound by these lower modes of passion and ignorance. And even in the mode of goodness, we're bound, although to a lesser extent, by the good quality. So that we perform philanthropic activities, we are involved in philosophical speculations and so on. But when one comes in touch with Krishna and devotional service, one comes under the control of the spiritual energy, Daivim Prakritam Ashritam. One transcends the modes of material nature. Sagunan samutityaitan brambhuyaya kopate mam chayogya vacharena bhakti yogena sevata. By devotional service, one transcends the modes of material nature and acts on the transcendental platform. Prabhupada gives the example that if you're riding your bicycle on the road, so you're going at a certain speed, but if you grab the back of a truck while you're riding the bicycle, then you go real fast. In India, sometimes we see this, if someone's holding onto the back of a lorry while he's riding his bicycle. He's moving along real fast. Because we still have these material bodies, there's some residual, there are some residual effects of the modes of nature. But those are superficial and minimal. Not that because I've become a devotee of Krishna, I'll never die, my body will live forever. Because I have this body, still some residual effects have to be there. But even while in this body, one becomes a liberated soul. So one's fate changes. One time, Giriraj Swami, in the course of his preaching, met a life member who happened to be a palm reader. So the palm reader read his hand. And he said, predicted that Giriraj Swami would leave the Hare Krishna movement. And then Giriraj Swami was very unhappy that he, you know, consulted some palm reader. But he went to Prabhupada. He was also unhappy that he got this reading. So he went to Srila Prabhupada and said, this is what happened. Prabhupada said, not to worry. He said, simply by clapping three times in front of the deities, all the lines on your palm change. Consider what our fate would have been without chanting Hare Krishna and how it's changed. Is that all right? Yes, after initiation. Initiation, of course, it's said that one becomes freed from material reactions, and Krishna accepts the devotee to be just like his own self at the time of initiation. From a practical point of view, initiation means the beginning of the process, and you promise to follow certain principles. It's not difficult to understand, not something esoteric. Before initiation, we may do anything and everything. But at the time of initiation, we promise, I will do this. I'll chant 16 rounds a day. I'll avoid these four regulative principles. I'll follow these four regulative principles, avoid four sinful activities. So that changes our life. That changes our life. And there's a contract there. That I will agree to do certain things. And the spiritual master, Krishna's representative, he also agrees to do certain things to uplift us from this ocean of birth and death, contingent upon our following the process. Not that because I'm initiated now, Maya can't touch me, Maya can't. We have to follow. When we follow strictly, then Maya won't touch us. Prabhupada said, simply follow these four regulative principles, chant 16 rounds a day, and Maya won't be able to touch you. But we have to do it. Not that we simply take initiation. Now we've got our ticket, so we don't have to do anything further. We have to follow the process. Then we'll get the result. Something else? What connection do the demigods controlling the organs have with karma? The demigods are also not independent. The demigods control the various organs or the various features of material nature in accordance with the law. The demigods can't say, okay, you're a human being, but I like you, you can go to the heavenly planets. Of course, they may have that, but according to your eligibility. That's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita also, that the tasya radhanamihate labhate chatutakaman mayavabhihitamita. Krishna says that I'm situated in the heart of the demigod, and I direct the demigod to give you a certain result. You're acting in a certain way, you deserve a certain result, so Krishna directs the demigod, all right, give this rascal, you know, what he deserves. The demigods also are bound by karma. The demigods are not independent operators. Hiranyakashipu, I want to become immortal. Brahma, I'm sorry, sir. I can't give you that. I'm not even a guru. And demigods are, they have power, tremendous power compared to us, but their power is also restricted. Just like a judge. The judge can't say, you know, I hate this guy, I'm going to hang him. In a proper government, the judge has to say, well, according to the law, this is the maximum punishment that I can impose. And then if he hates you, he gives you the maximum. If he likes you, maybe he gives you the minimum. But he has a certain range within which he's obliged to act. He's not an independent figure. He has to give you what you deserve according to your actions.
How can that conditional living being, which are entangled in the realms of nature, come in contact with the emotional service?
How do conditioned living beings under the laws of material nature come in contact with devotional service and change their destiny? It depends on the mercy of the devotee. There's no amount of effort that will enable us to get devotional service. It depends upon the mercy of the Vaishnava. If one is fortunate enough, then Guru Krishna Prasade by Bhakti Lata Beach. By the mercy of a devotee in Krishna, one gets the seed of devotional service.
Is this also controlled?
No. It's called causeless devotional service. It's controlled by Krishna. It's controlled by Krishna, but it's not under the laws of nature. This person has done this many pious activities, so he can become a devotee. Well, this person's sinful, he can't know. Murgari the hunter became a devotee. Why? What pious credit did he have? Narad Muni wanted to favor him, that's all.
Krishna inspired Narad Muni.
Yeah, by the grace of Krishna. He met Narad, by the grace of Narad, he got the seed of devotional service.
What is the the connection between prakriti or maya and the demigod? Because living entities are under the control.
What's the nature between prakriti and the demigods?
Yeah.
On
are
one
they
side.
Under the maya?
Yeah, sure. The demigods are under prakriti also. The demigods are conditioned souls. You can become a demigod if you like. Perform enough pious activities and you're eligible for the post. You can become Indra or Chandra or one of those. But they're conditioned. Even Brahma has to die. That means he's under the control of material nature. He has a material body. His lifetime comes to an end at the destined time. And demigods are thoroughly under the control of material nature. Nigranami Srijanacha. Krishna says, I sent forth the clouds and I control the rain. Of course Indra does it, but he does it under the control of Krishna. And under the control of material nature. Demigods are not free. They're like the trustees. In the prison there are some trusted prisoners because their behavior has been good. They're trusted and they're given some responsibility and perhaps some control over the other prisoners. They're given some privileges. They're given, but they're still in jail. Not that they have freedom, just that they have some greater privilege, some greater responsibility. And the demigods are still under the laws of prakriti. They administer something of the laws of material nature, but they themselves are under the laws. Just in the government, the judge administers the law, but he is also under the law. But if there's a king, then the king can do no wrong. You can't bring a legal action against the king, because the king is the law. There was a question asked in some newspaper column in Britain, does the queen have a passport? Someone was curious, does the queen have a passport? The answer is no, the queen doesn't have a passport, because passports are issued in the name of the queen. There's no authority that has to give the queen a passport. She issues the passports. You can't take away the queen's passport. She's the queen. So, in principle, she's above the law, without getting into the technicalities of a constitutional monarchy, but that's the idea. So, the demigods, they're all under the laws of nature. And Krishna's not under the laws of nature at all. He can do what he likes. He's not restricted by any laws of nature.
And Maya herself? Directly under Krishna.
Yeah, Maya's Shristi Stiti Pralaya Sajana Shakti Reka Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibhati Durga. It's Chana Rupa Mati Yasya Chita. Maya works under the direct. Maya Adyakshena Prakriti Suyate. Maya Adyakshena, under my supervision, Prakriti Suyate, Prakriti is working. Maya is not independent, any more than your shadow is independent of your body.
But she's not under herself.
Maya, she's not an illusion. No, Maya's not an illusion. Maya is the controller of illusion. The Maya is engaged in the service of Krishna. Mm-hmm.
You said that there is 8 million 400,000 pieces. Mm. And where demigods among?
Demigods are counted in the human species, but higher. In the higher brackets of the human species. Some other question? Yeah?
It's regarding the ocean. So, many times you see that after some time, the process somehow it can dry. What's the reason?
The process is not dry, we're dry.
what that happens to the ocean? What the reason?
Why does it become dry? Because of neglect or offenses. What is that? The Pajalpa Niyamagraha. Atyahara prayashascha prajalpa niyamagraha janasamgena lalyam cha shadvir bhakti pranashati. By eating too much, collecting too much, over endeavor for material things, by loose talk, by neglecting the rules and regulations, or becoming a rule and regulation fanatic, by bad association, materialistic association, by greed, one can spoil one's devotional advancement by committing 10 kinds of offenses while chanting. We impede our spiritual advancement. And the other side, by avoiding offenses and utsaha nishchayatarya, by enthusiasm, confidence, determination and patience, following the rules and regulations, giving up bad association and acting by following the footsteps of the acharyas. By these principles, we make good advancement in Krishna consciousness. Something else? You don't understand. Brahma doesn't understand either. How the universe is constituted. Something is described in the fifth canto, but the full extent of it will not understand. You'll understand somewhat. You know, the ant. Try to explain to the ant the city of Ljubljana. He can't figure it out. He doesn't have the equipment to understand. He can't even understand one city block. So how much can we understand? We think that we understand so much. But understanding is very limited. So many things we don't understand.
Sadhana bhakti, no need to attain full perfection. So my question is, how does it look? What's the practical application? What for sadhaka means this direct experience of the Supreme Lord?
What does it mean, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, that you can...
On this level, sadhaka level.
The sadhaka level means something. Otherwise, at the perfect level, it means like Dhruva Maharaj, or Prahlad Maharaj, seeing the personality of Godhead face to face in transcendental ecstasy. And sadhaka level means something. We get some little perception of Krishna's presence according to our eligibility, according to our advancement. According to our... If we chant nicely, we get some realization that Krishna and His holy name are identical. We get some experience. We serve nicely, we get some feeling that Krishna is present. According to our... surrender, according to our service. Anything else? Yes? How can we have faith in something that we don't understand? You ever drive over the bridges in the city? You understand them? You have a degree in civil engineering and you know how they're working? No. You use these electrical appliances, computers. You understand computers? No. Do you use them? Yes. So many things. Fire. You know, do we understand fire? A little bit. We have some little understanding, but it's hot. But, you know, what do we know? Even great physicists who've dedicated their life to studying fire will tell us that they don't really understand fire inside out. We have some understanding, and on the basis of our understanding, we say, yes, I have confidence that I can drive over this bridge and it will not collapse when I do so. That when I press the button, the computer will turn on. That when I click here, the window will open and something will happen. That when I light a fire and put it under the pot, the pot will heat up and food will cook. So we have a certain amount of confidence based upon our limited understanding. And especially by hearing from authorities. There are so many things that we don't really understand. But we take it on authority. And that's how we learn. So many things. Swimming. You know, how do you know that you're not going to just sink to the bottom when you're a little kid and never be seen again? But your father or your mother or your swimming teacher says, no, you just do this and do this and do this and don't worry, you'll float and you'll move. And because you have some confidence, you do those things and you find out, yeah, I'm floating, I'm moving, I'm not sinking to the bottom. So many things we learn by following the authority. We don't really understand. You follow the doctor, you don't understand how these little pills are working. He understands to a greater extent than we do. And he says, listen, take them. Something, it will, don't worry, take these pills. And if you have confidence, then you take the pills and you get the result. You may understand or not understand. If you like, you can go to the internet and read all about the pills and how they work and try and understand as much as you can. Otherwise, you can just take the pills. We just want to make sure that we have confidence in the right authority. That the doctor that we're following is not fake, that the whatever it is that we're reading is legitimate. So we want to see that we're not following some silly nonsense, but we have confidence that Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, these books are genuine books of knowledge. They've been accepted by great self-realized souls, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Shankaracharya. They've all accepted. In recent times, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, they've accepted. So we're accepting, you know. I'm not banking my money just in, you know, a little box in the corner of somebody's garage. I'm banking, you know, where the big people put their money. Where the rich men put their money, that's a bank. So we're following our charges. We may fully understand or we may hardly understand, but we're following the authorities. Is that okay? How can Brahma be our authority if he also can't understand? He's not God. To be our authority, he doesn't have to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has to understand the process. He has to understand the essential, what it's essential to understand. He understands that he's an eternal servant of Krishna. He understands the process of devotional service. So much he understands. Even Krishna doesn't understand everything. He understands everything, but he's everything. And he's beyond his ability to understand. Is that okay? All right. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to Shri Krishna.